Good afternoon, honorable members. CEO of IDT and your interledge, good afternoon and welcome to the meeting. Members are saying this meeting should not, the whip of the committee is saying this meeting should not take long because there are no issues. I don't know. honorable members, I think presentations, you all got presentations, okay. Let me say, really, there are no real issues. No real issues. That's not just smaller than the issues that we need to tie up. And also those legal issues that are on here. Yeah, I've got so many legal cases, man. So without any waste of time, I would like to welcome you and allow the CEO to make the presentation. Over to you, Sister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, good afternoon. I will start, Chairperson, firstly by apologizing on behalf of the Chairperson of the Board. She had confirmed yesterday when we were talking and discussing about the fact that we must come to Cape Town, but she had overlooked the fact that she had committed herself for an engagement at 2. So she realized that she will not be able to have gone back by then. She has sent her sincere apologies to the committee. Chairperson, secondly, may I introduce colleagues that I am traveling with. On my right-hand side, I have got Mr. Vukane Mtinso, who is one of the executives at IDT. And I have got Mr. Wakaba, who is currently playing a role of a chief operations officer at the IDT, responsible for the operations, both current and as well as the transformative process. Next to Mr. Wakaba, I've got Mr. Ian Ellis, who is our chief financial officer. We're also accompanied by Mr. Popo Maja, who is responsible for our stakeholder and also frequents Parliament a lot, together with Kanyisano Dangala, who is also accompanying us. Honorable members, you can see the first slide, we were not sure whether our minister will come, so we thought maybe we should acknowledge that, but we can see that probably might have made a mistake, but we just wanted to cover the whole ground. So we'd also put up the minister. The presentation is directed to yourselves, honorable members. Let me also outline how we are going to take you through the presentation. Honorable members, in response to the State of the Nation address, and as well as the interests that honorable members have indicated to us, to focus on regions, to focus on the specific programs that we implement throughout the country, we have decided to innovatively relook into how we present our annual report. So honorable members would note that our annual report is a bit different from the way that we have always presented it. Mr. Mtinso was helping us with that innovation to try and align to some of the questions that honorable members have been putting forward to us. And we've attempted with this first year annual report to try and respond to those elements. May I also, honorable members, refer you to an erratum on the IDT 2010-11 annual report. Between the first print and the print that we are distributing at the moment, there has been some errors which we will go in detail to that. There is also a letter that we have presented to the chairperson, but we will take you through what are the changes. The content of the report remains. It is just a few typos and a few elements that we would like to have corrected. And there is a corrected version that we are currently distributing. Honorable members, I have requested Mr. Mtinso to take us through as the architect of this new report, new format of the report that we are presenting to yourselves. May I request that he takes us through?
Thank you, CEO, Chairperson, honorable members. The CEO referred to what might look like minor errors, but they are significant. Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. It's part of the innovation. So there are four significant errors, Chairperson, on the report. One is on the back cover of the original version, which is now this is the new version. But the back cover of the original version, it should have read our mission statement. What you have in the original tabled version is the non-revised mission statement. The significant change is sustainable development, as opposed to creating a better life. The second error is on the first page itself, where you had about the IDT. You will notice that there is a word in the original version that says is a South African Development Agency. We have deleted that and we've just said it's a development agency. I think those are the significant ones. Once those changes were effected or are effected, it moves the page numbers. So on page 17, the last paragraph in the original version, the reference was made to page 103 as opposed to page 102. Otherwise, the facts are okay. It's just the page numbering itself. And then on page 72, paragraph 1, a reference in the original version was made to 103, and then it's 102. The same page reference is also page 104 to 108. It should be 103 to 107. Those are just the minor changes. But the details and the substance is the same. There's really, they may seem cosmetic, Chairperson, but they're quite fundamental in some instances. I think she did already shout at me, Chairperson. Now, we've just reiterated the purpose of the IDT just so that we are all on the same level. This purpose we've lifted from the original documents of the IDT. Our vision is to be the leading development, the leading knowledge-based development agency. I've referred to, when I talked about the corrections here, that we've added, instead of their own potential, we've added sustainable development as opposed to creating a better life. And I think that's a fundamental shift in terms of our focus. Chairperson, I must say that when I go through the presentation, you'll understand why that sustainable development becomes fundamental. Because, in fact, our presentation is in twofold. One is the annual report itself. But you will note that in the annual report, we keep referring to transformation. And we thought that it would be opportune for the committee to advise us, but also know the journey that we seek to be taking. Our goals for the year that we set for ourselves, based on the state of the nation, we took inspiration in the state of the nation, where the president says that we will define ourselves as an administration that knows where people live, understand their needs, and respond faster. So we've measured ourselves, at least in this past financial year, on those fundamentals. We've contributed to this through our strategic objectives, which I assume are known: attaining sustainable livelihoods through people-centered interventions, pioneering innovative development solutions, ensuring excellence in service delivery. Now, how we've presented the report in the presentation is really a measure of those three strategy objectives. The annual report itself, as the CEO has said, we've sought to go into details per province, so that then it is understood what we are doing in each province, so that there's no confusion. And I think members have expressed over and over again that desire to actually know what happens in the provinces, and I think we thank them for that leadership. We also set ourselves the goal for there to advance the social policy objectives, and how we advance them is through diverse programs across national departments as well as all spheres of government itself, at local, at provincial, and at national level. We make this point, Chairperson, because there's often a misunderstanding, even in the general public, that the IDT has a set of resources that it disperses. Yet the IDT really acts as an implementing agent on behalf of the state, and that's why we make that particular point. And finally, we set the objective up front that we will ensure that we get the 9th unqualified audit. I'm happy to say that we did to a large extent meet all the objectives, in particular the ninth unqualified audit in itself. If we look at the growth, and I think members are quite familiar with this, if you look at 2001, we're running a portfolio for about 200 and something million. If you look at the last financial year, we're sitting at about 2.3 in expenditure, but 2.5 in terms of secured contract itself. These were the targets that we set for ourselves. We make the point to show that we've surpassed the target. We had set ourselves a target of 2 billion, and we managed to surpass that particular target of 2 billion, which is quite significant. We have put this picture at the back here because it really shows how we work. That's the board. If you walk into Ntondlo, in the Eastern Cape, you will see a board of this nature, which is a Food for Waste program. And really, we take an integrated government program and implement it with government because we can transcend all spheres of government. I think the minister also makes that point in a forward where she says the IDT will reach beyond the confines of the bureaucracy. So we are actually acting on behalf of the state. In delivering our portfolio, we focused on rural development. So if you look at the spread of our projects, and we've done that in the report per province where we've dotted the projects, you will note that most of our projects, 80% of them, are sitting in rural South Africa. You'll also note that we are women-focused. 70% of job creation over the past 5 years has benefited women directly in terms of job creation. We've also focused on youth development. I think this year we actually had set ourselves a target of 50% for youth development. But in terms of participation of youth, you will note that we are at 50%, which means half of the people that we are dealing with are young people. We had also set ourselves a target of 2% to involve people with disabilities. We are at 3% in terms of involving those people with disabilities. I must mention here that had it not been for the push and the courage of the Deputy Minister, we probably would have not met the target, and I think she pushed us to get to that particular 3%. We also look at integrating mutually reinforcing pillars of sustainable development. That's people, that's planet, that's prosperity, and the fourth one being partnerships, which underlies all of them. And then we also implement key integration government programs. I've just listed a few, the EPWP, Comprehensive Rural Development Program, the Mud Schools Program, the Integrated Justice Facilities. Really what we seek to do, because if you have dealt with the bureaucracy, you will note that you can only deal with one department and yet you need five departments to assist you. So you can look at the IDT as that integrator that brings all those five departments into the service area. If you look at our analysis on empowerment spend over the MTF period of 2008-09 to 10-11, we've spent really a total of about 5.2 billion. Of that 5.2 billion, 1.1 billion, or 22%, went to women. 3.2 billion of that, or 62%, went to black economic empowerment, and 1.3 went to local spend. Well, if you try and do the maths and the percentages, it will not come to 100. Obviously, because some are black women who are locals, that's why the figures don't come to total 100%. But that's the spend if you look at it. If you look at it in terms of portfolio, you will note that even last year, our biggest spend is on school building, and that's education. Obviously, because that's priority number one of the state, education for all. Priority number two is healthcare, and you'll see that our second biggest portfolio is sitting with healthcare. So significantly, those are the two big portfolios that we are running, and then there are others, justice facilities and so on. Our operational landscape, as I said earlier on, what we've done here is we've taken the COGDA categorization of municipalities, where the red municipalities or class one municipalities are the most vulnerable, class two are the blue ones. If you look at all these dots here, you will see that these are IDT projects and they're sitting between class one and class two, which means we are in the poorest places of South Africa in terms of our project spend. Our performance highlights, as I've said, 2.5 in terms of our turnover. Our expenditure is sitting at 2.2 billion. EPWP work opportunities, 32,697. I've talked to BE spend and I've talked to youth participation. The people at the back there in Ntondlo Municipality, and that's the EPWP project that we run there. There is a program that I think it was in the 2009 State of the Nation where we talked about revitalizing small towns. And this is what this seeks to do in an environmentally friendly manner. As you can see, all the people, except one at the back, are women. I think I'm making the point that we are making sure that we impact on women in the main. If you look at our trend analysis in terms of expenditure, again, that growth in portfolio you can see, and that steep curve. Honorable members, that has implications, and I'll get to the implications. That steady growth needs to be accompanied by adequate support, and we're not convinced that we've actually got the adequate support, and you'll see how we're trying to address that going forward. If you look at the report itself, the audit opinion of the Auditor General, this is the ninth unqualified audit opinion for this particular financial year, I've said that. There were some issues that the Auditor General raised. One is on the predetermined objectives. Now, he found this to be deficient. I must make the point that there's an allowance of about 20%. You allow, because there's things that you can't prove and you can't have planned for. The nature of our business is such that we can't sit in March and plan totally everything because we are responding to government needs. So from time to time, we have to take new portfolios. And that's why then the Auditor General is saying your predetermined objectives are not sitting there. I must say 23% deficiency. The norm is 20%. So we're not that far off. Although he's emphasizing it, we're not that far off. He does note that we've made an improvement from last year's report itself. Then the financial statements, they were corrected. He had made a point about the financial statements themselves in terms of the normal process of financial statements. We've corrected those. And then expenditure management, and when I go into the details, you will see there's not a significant amount, but there's an amount on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We've made the analysis. It's something that was outside of our control, but you will see what that entailed. If you look at our program performance, I said the 2.2. The employment costs are 2.219, which means we're under 10%. So for 2.19, the state is spending 2.19 to get 2.2 billion out. So the return on investment is quite high, and the administrative costs remain under 10%, at about 9.6%. The increase in the program expenditure from the last financial year is 39%. I'm making this point here because when we look at our staff complement and you compare it to last year, it's not a 39% growth, which in itself has got particular implications. So we've got 366 employees. This is the revenue in terms of what we've generated. Last year, we generated 36 million in management fees. This year, we generated 81 million, which means there's an increase of 121%. The investment income was 64 last year, and now it's at 40. Understandably, because we're not having the same amount of resources, because we're digging into the pot of money. So there's a decrease of 38%, equally the same with the interest, and that's tender documents, about 1.2 that we received. Program expenditure, last year 1.6, this year 2.2, 39% increase, 121% increase. The recovery rate is 3.6%, if we're to talk about what we spend and what we recover coming back. This is also worrisome, and there are drivers to this. The drivers are the extent to which government departments are willing to pay a state entity management fees. So we spend a lot of time really cracking our heads to convince government departments to pay us for the professional work that we particularly move forward. Our expenses, I've talked to the employment costs and the administrative expenses. There's the depreciation. What I want to focus on is the fruitless and wasteful expenditure here, which is at about 900,000. This largely relates to our telecom accounts, which actually come late and then we're unable to pay. So the Auditor General sees them as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, significant amount.
And they fluctuated from 390 to 900.
Two things. One is the growth of the portfolio means that we're going to spend more on administration. The second part, and maybe Ian can explain in greater detail on the issue of the telecom account.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. That number is actually made up of a number of figures, as has been said, part of it relates to telecom accounts which have been received late. They relate to telecom accounts from some of the satellite offices. It also includes penalties and interest due to SARS and to the Compensation Commissioner. Now, both of these issues are being challenged by the IDT. There has been interaction with both parties, and the IDT at the present time is making every effort to recover fully and to have those penalties and interest reversed.
Thank you, and thank you, Chairperson. The eradication of mud schools, I think this is the last year we'll be spending that original 150 million. So this is just a balance of 13 million that we are spending on those 150 million schools. If we take our three strategic objectives, as I said earlier on, sustainable livelihoods, innovative, if you look at the spend, you'll see that we're spending more on objective three, that's service delivery excellence. The second one being objective two, innovative development solutions, and then sustainable livelihoods. Obviously, this has to be driven by governance, which is really your management and board functions that are sitting here. So again, you can see that we're not a costly organization in terms of what we are driving. The background there is Rimfasmark. This is the sports ground here. In Rimfasmark, they have a particular problem around alcohol and substance abuse. And this happens at night. Usually when we do sports, we do them during the day. So obviously, you know, teenagers and young people such as myself would go and play football during the day and then at night be in the shipping. The innovative solution then was to put solar panels there in the sports ground there so that the football can happen at night and I don't have to go to the shipping at night. So that's what it's a CRDP project in itself. Our performance highlights, in other words, where we did well was on the diversity and coverage of the IDT portfolio. I've shown you the map of the coverage. I've shown you the diversity of the portfolio. If you look at the pie chart of the portfolio, it follows the priorities of government. So it's not far from government. On international relations, we've continued to drive, and we will next week again, we've continued to drive the IPSA agenda in itself. We've recently joined the Global Business Council on Health, which is an organization of about 120 international corporates, and so we belong to that. Our stakeholder management and corporate positioning is looking a bit better. We could do more, but I think more people are beginning to understand who the IDT is and what the IDT does. The transformation process is well underway, and I will brief the committee in detail. We've submitted our business case to the minister. The treasurer has taken sight of the business case. The DPSA has also taken sight of the business case. So we're well on our way for transformation. In terms of financial sustainability, we managed to get 150 million allocation. I must say, honorable members, that allocation, I've never seen it, and I worked in the public service now for about 12 years, where there's an MTF allocation, but it's only on year one. So when you look at that allocation, there's no year two, there's no year three, which is quite difficult for us. So it means that we can't plan the activities for next year because we don't know what we're getting next year. So by the time we know what we're getting next year, it will be January, which means we've got only February to spend in April. So that's the difficult situation that we sit in. I think honorable members would be able to assist us in unlocking that because that's a problem in itself. In compliance and risk management, you will remember that there was particular findings in the 2009 and 10 report. So we've got a risk management strategy that we've put in place. We've responded to all the concerns raised. Thus, the Auditor General felt more comfortable with this, yes. I must say, and the CEO continuously pushes us to ensure that we continuously improve. So this next year, we will improve again, and so on and so on. The payment turnaround times, which is a huge concern because we're dealing with largely women, largely small businesses at a local level. So we set ourselves a target of 14 days. We achieved an average of 7 days, which means that the IDT within 7 days in terms of an average. Of course, there will be the odd, I must say, because that's how you come to an average. There will be the odd one who will be paid on day 9 or day 10, but there will be reasons. But our average is sitting at about 7 days. Areas of concern, we've decreased our participation rate at 29% women. Last year we were at 51%, now we're at 49%. It does concern us. And also, you must consider that our women's spend is at 26%. So balance of the participation with the spend. We are spending more on women, but it's less women that we're spending on. The main reasons and drivers of this is the extent to which we've managed to build on our partnerships such as SAWIC, where the women are located in terms of the construction industry. It's not a huge fall, but it's a concern, and we've put it in amber. It's something that we're keeping under check for this particular financial year. Functional partnerships as well. The lead time and turnaround of the partnerships. Whereas we're quick at writing the partnership agreements, some of them don't take off immediately as we wanted to. So we're putting that on the radar for us to look at. The number of classrooms and health facilities constructed, you will see that we did not meet our target of those particular areas. There were drivers even there, because remember, we must rely on government departments to give us the work for us to meet that particular target. Now, if you look at one of the key areas or the key drivers of that target was in the Eastern Cape, where the classroom backlog is highest. And yet we were unable to enter into a significant agreement with the Eastern Cape Department of Education for various reasons. And I think members will be well aware of what Cabinet has done to try and move that particular indicator. Our work opportunities, and as a result of the non-response on the classrooms and health facilities, then our work opportunities decreased. Our target was 35,000, we got to 25,000. So these two are kind of related as indicators. We are keeping them on the watch. This is where we seek to continuously improve. Our value proposition then, this is a school in Western Cape, Clapmans. This is how the school looked like. Incidentally, the Amapogopogo coach used to be a teacher in the school when it looked like this. So this is how the school looked like, and our value proposition as the IDT is to take that and move it to this. What you have here is a school. This is the computer hall. So when you walk in, this is the feel that you get of that school. You walk in there, there's a reception area here, and then the school is at the back here. This was designed by the community itself. They made that design so that, because they have a simple target. Their target is every community member must have an email address. Very simple, reachable target. But that target enables us to design the school such that people from the surrounding community can come in here and use the facilities there. There's a library sitting here at the back and an amphitheater there. So we take that to this using these people. It's quite innovative because that design was done by the community and the school itself. The red zone in areas where we're highly concerned. You will see when you look at our annual report, there's a huge portfolio growth in KZN. In fact, it accounts to close to 50% of what the IDT is running. It's a huge concern for us because that growth has not been accompanied by a significant growth in KZN support. So it's something that we're looking at. It's something that we want to take forward. Our advocacy program is also of concern. We are good at delivering programs, but we have not done well on the research capability. So we can tell you project by project. But what does it mean? And I think honorable members want to know, what does it mean for the policy environment? Where must we refine the policy? How can we better do the policy for these various things? So we need to deepen our advocacy, and you'll see how we're going to do that. Also, our spend on community development. Most of the spend that you see, although it's infrastructure spend, I'll take Clapmans. So when we put Clapmans into our books, it's put as infrastructure spend. And yet we spent a significant time developing the community. So I want to put that in context. But we are saying we need to look at that. Youth spend as well, 13% instead of 15%. But we do have 50% participation rate of youth, mainly in EPWP and other areas. Our labor spend, 10%. We are targeted 24%. That's again because we started employing alternative construction methodologies, for an example. So the extent to which in those construction methodologies you can have longer term employment because it's quicker is also another issue there. So also the number of people that you will employ, although they'll be at a lower level than your normal building process, they will be at a lower level, but they're going to work less time and they're going to be fewer than when you do the bricks and mortar in the classical sense. I'll skip that on. Our corporate governance, I think you know it already, the Board of Trustees, the CEO, and these are the various business units that are sitting there. Our staff establishment, in terms of our total positions, 376. We've got 10 vacancies, so there are 366 staff members that are sitting there. I think that part, and once we start started reflecting on what we had done over the past 3 years, we then began to remind ourselves or reflect on, so what does it mean? And the CEO always says, so what? You know, you've built the school, so what? What does that mean? You know? So we started reflecting on what would the future growth of the IDT look like? And we reminded ourselves of where we came from the first IDT that built the toilets in the field, to the IDT that in 1997 invested in colleges. Incidentally, one of those colleges, which was St. Luke's College, was a college that I attended in high school, and it was funded by the IDT. So it's almost full circle now that I come back to the IDT having started there. And we reminded ourselves, why was the IDT there? Then we looked at how can we renew what we're doing? How can we revitalize what we're doing? And we came to the conclusion that social infrastructure delivery is key to the development of South Africa. But you will see how then we redefined that, we refocused that, and we reshaped and recommitted into the social infrastructure delivery. Our analysis looks something like this. You have communities that are sitting there. You have government departments delivering various programs in silos. You have donors themselves targeting these communities sitting there, as well as the private sector and donor agencies. Then there's a cluster of NGO sector people that try and reach here. There's a huge gap that we're seeing here. And what we're saying that if you look at the development landscape of South Africa, we believe that there's a space that exists for a single nationwide agency to bridge the gap between government and donors and the community. That's our long-term view. That's our 30-year view, if you like. And we believe that there's a case to be built. And it's put in simple terms. If I was a disabled young black woman in rural South Africa, I would have to apply to the NYDA, to the National Development Agency, to the National Lotteries Agency, to the Department of Social Development, to the Department of Rural Development. If I'm lucky, one of those institutions will respond to me, if I'm lucky. So that's why we're making that particular case. You just need to drive through the landscape of South Africa and watch our billboards, proudly built by the IDT. And then you walk 5 steps, proudly built by the National Development Agency. And we met on the plane. We never actually talked about why are we going to Remfosmark and what are we going to do there. But we met on the plane and we just put our boards. So that's the case we're building for the long term of South Africa. There is a development gap. We're saying to correct that gap, the IDT has to reflect on itself and it must evolve itself. So what you have now is the current IDT sitting here. And we're saying that this IDT needs to refine its mandate, needs to refine its strategies, such that in the long run, in 2030, you have that single agency that's sitting there. Our business case that we've presented to the minister really doesn't address this. It addresses this interceding period. How do we ensure that the IDT refines its mandate, its methodologies, in order for it to become part of this single agency? I must say, when I say single agency, it could be backroom. It could be 75 agencies working as one. It could be one merged agency. We're not sure yet, but we're saying there's a case that's sitting there. Given this gap then, we're saying the IDT must maintain its people-centeredness, its integrity, its professionalism, accountability, and visionary status. However, the IDT must prepare communities to receive, own, manage, and sustain the development. How often have you seen communities that suddenly they say, we didn't know that there was going to be a school here. We heard that there's a school. So we've got to be able to prepare these communities to receive the development so they can participate. Most importantly, they must be able to, in the long run, sustain that development. How often have you seen that we have to go back and repair the road or repair the school or repair the hospital? So that sustainability is a key thing. We believe that this can be done through delivering social infrastructure. We have defined social infrastructure as all the necessary measures, facilities, and networks, without exclusion of the other. Because often when we define social infrastructure, we define it only in facilities, forgetting that there are measures that need to go to maintain these facilities, forgetting that there are people that need to utilize the facilities. And so we've defined it in this manner and fashion, and we've appended here sustainable development, those four pillars that I referred to earlier. So if we're to be asked, what does your IDT of the future do? It delivers social infrastructure, simply put. That's what as our interim COO, because someone has to hold the operations together as we continue to refine this particular vision. Most of us have taken on different roles. For an example, my role is around stakeholder relations and communications now in the transition period. Then we'll have the new IDT as step three. What will the new IDT look like and what will it do? It will mobilize communities, because remember, I said there's networks in the social infrastructure delivery, so it will mobilize communities. It will support institutions and it will deliver programs. In doing that, it will share the knowledge that it gets in this area and it will build partnerships to deliver on that. A very short, I don't want to say, but a right-sized head office that really plays a support to the operations. The bulk of what will happen at the IDT or the future IDT will be in the provinces. The bulk of the staff in the new IDT and systems will be located in the provinces. Logically, because delivery happens in provinces. There's no delivery that sits in Pretoria. The delivery is in Tofimbaba. And that's why we've reshaped the IDT in this manner and fashion. We've chosen the butterfly for obvious reasons, because there are parts that we need of the old IDT to cocoon into the new IDT. There are parts that we need to discard of. So if you look at the growth of a butterfly, it does exactly that. It takes and it moves forward in that manner and fashion. Expressed differently, these are the three areas of focus that we've got: that community aspirations or building community partnerships or community mobilization, institutional support, as well as a program delivery in partnership with funders, government, private sector, and so on. We've split this conveniently into percentages to give members an idea of what the thrust of the IDT will be, or the new IDT. And that thrust, if you look at this, is communities. We are in the business of building communities. So when you walk into an IDT project, you will not see just infrastructure. You will see vibrant communities. That's where we want to go. You will see communities that are active. Expressed differently, this is we're in the initial state now. We're sitting in the interim somewhere here in 2011. Then we'll get to the ideal state of the IDT. Our proposal to the National Treasurer is a five-year proposal. That window in that S that I showed is a 10-year window. So up to about 2020. There are risks in us taking this path, which I think members must be looking at least where you sit. One is the regulatory risk, especially around the legislative and policy environment. First of all, we cannot continue to be a trust, simply put. The Treasury is not comfortable with the trust. Let me say also, we are not comfortable with the trust because it has its own problem. So where we will need the interface of the honorable members is in us defining that policy and or legislative mandate, because we can confirm that there's a relevance in the IDT. We can confirm that there's a need for the IDT. But that legwork, that clarification, is something that the committee has to guide us through, because we're not legislators, and that's what we're looking at here. There are some strategic risks around the IDT in terms of the broader environment. Now, we're looking at the alignment of our strategy with the national socioeconomic objectives. If you look at the past 5 years, or even the past 10 years, our objectives have not fundamentally shifted. And I'm sure members will say, we are still pursuing, at least in form, the same objectives as we did 5 years ago. Now, there's a danger and there's a risk that if we misalign the IDT strategy to those objectives, then the IDT will cease to be relevant. And that's the risk that we're looking at. There's a business risk around the internal environment of the IDT, as well as the external, because our client departments see us merely as people who must deliver infrastructure. But we say infrastructure by itself cannot make sense. You have to deliver infrastructure in the context of community development, because that school is within a community, that hospital is within a particular community. So there are risks there that I think honorable members could become our advocates. Because when we go, let's say, to the DG of Health, and say to the DG of Health, we would like to assist you with your portfolio, but to do it right, we must facilitate the comments and so forth. That DG is not too concerned about the community. It's concerned about the backlog of hospitals and wants to spend just on the backlog of hospitals. So there's a lot of communication risks around the perceptions. And this, I think, the best way to explain it is in relation to labor relations. Because the biggest word that you can say to labor is transformation. Then they say, aha, mafungu spot, they want to retrench us. And the reality is we must shape the IDT to deliver. So whereas we are saying that there are skills that we will require from the IDT, there are skills that we currently have that we will not require in the future IDT. There are areas that we have to grow, there are areas that we have to shrink. But if we do the estimates of numbers, we will need more numbers than what we currently have, if you just look at the overall picture. There are also financial risks around the sustainability. I've highlighted this. Even the MTF was sitting with the 150 allocation for this financial year, and there's no outer year, and there's no year after that. It's a huge financial risk for us. It means we can't commit to clients that we can deliver something in 2013, because we don't know what the funding situation is in 2013. And then obviously there are other related risks that are sitting there. So put differently, currently you have the yellow, this is what you have as national office. Shrink that to where the dotted line is, which means this yellow becomes the operational space, and that's where the regions are sitting, and the administration is also sitting within the regions, minimal sitting here. National office's role, coordinate, monitor impact, and all those kinds of things. That's what we'll be doing here. We're looking at a customer team-focused kind of outlook. Our recommendations, by the way, this board here is as you enter Moesha in Giani. And it does actually show that the IDT works in partnership. It doesn't stand by itself as a delivery. So our recommendation is that the committee approves the annual report as it stands with those corrections that the CEO has put forward. And that the committee just notes the transformation drivers that we've highlighted. But we do believe that there's scope for future detailed engagement with the committee. And I must say here, Chairperson, our engagement is to seek your wisdom. It's not to tell you that this is what we're going to do, but it's for you to advise us in terms of the constituencies. How can they respond better? How can we respond better to those needs there? So thank you very much, Chairperson, and I think I'll hand over to the CEO for conclusion as well.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to add much, but maybe just to indicate that our unqualified audit financially does not even have a matter of emphasis, and we are very glad about that. I would recall at the last, when we were presenting to yourself, I think the committee was quite hard to say, actually it's not expected of us to even have those matters of emphasis, and our corrective measures that we've put in place have given us a clean audit without any matter of emphasis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any additions? None. All right, members, that's the presentation. Aaron Mazoba.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Will be followed by Honorable Gila Wabakeila Wabastroli.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I think really we have to congratulate the IDT for the greater improvement, even on the approach of giving us the report. I think, as we always say, that we are not fighting you guys. What we want to strengthen your institution. We want to strengthen the operations of our government, because the people out there, they have placed trust on us to say that we must represent them. But for you to listen to us, we really appreciate. Really, these are good results that we are looking at. And to get unqualified without a matter of emphasis is a great achievement, because the target was 2014 to say that we must get clean audit, but you have managed to get a clean audit. We really congratulate you. But Honorable Scala always say we can't just not say something even though things are good. So this is typical of this committee. Yes, thank you very much. But we see the report, it's good, as we have said, and your achievements of about 693 classes, you know, especially in the deep rural area. and the comment of the CEO to say that development without people is not development. We agree on that, and it's reflected on the vision also when you put this. We can really note that. Also, appreciating the report per provinces, to say you are giving us per provinces. I just peruse the report and then see that you have done it. But my concern is around the issue of employment decrease. While the president has made a call for this year to be a year of job creation, but also I understand that it talks to the methodology that we are using now to try and fast track service delivery. But at the same time, to me, I want to just to check this new methodology that we are using. You said it's cheap, it's fast. If it is cheap, can't we create more jobs because you'll be having savings on those on the budget that we have, because now it's a separate thing. Because if it is going to continue having this reducing employment, really it's not also assisting our communities that we are saying development without communities is like something that is not there if there are no communities that are benefiting out of that development. Also, we one note your challenge around the issue of allocation of funds that really it does not give you enough time to do planning. If we are working, it's like working in ad hoc. You are just given now, it's from hand to mouth. You know, you can't really plan properly. I think these are some of the things as a portfolio committee that, as you indicated, that we will be focusing at and try to assist where possible for us as a portfolio, so that you can continue with the good work. Also, the issue of I'm not sure the youth participation is 50%, but when it comes to expenditure or spending on the youth programs, it's less than your target. I'm not sure if you can unpack the cause of it, to say that you have got a lot of youth participating, but at the same time the programs of youth, you know, are not talking to your target, and it's reduced, as well as the issue of the women. I don't know what is the difficulty on the participation of women, because you said you talk about 49%, hence it's 26%, you know. If we can understand the difficulty of them participating in the programs, is the issue of the skills, is the issue of what, and so on and so forth, or the way that you deal with them. And yeah, also it talks to you said labor spend. Yeah, it's part of this decreasing that on the expenditure of the labor that one is concerned with, because there is that call. If you can tell us the savings on this new methodology that we are using to fast track service delivery, to say the savings that we are having, can it create more jobs than in the, I don't know, the conventional methodology that we are using? Yes, to say that can it cover on the savings that we have? Because I know I was in Eastern Cape, you were indicating that it's very cheap. You know, this guy that was doing presentation was saying it's far cheap and it's long span and so on. But we want to understand the savings of it. How can it cover? At the moment, I think I will just that's my contribution. But well done, really. We really appreciate, and for the 9 consecutive years getting unqualified, and now we are in a clean audit. To us, it shows where we are going. Thank you.
Thank you, Mama Nagel.
No. Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, I would like to know the clarity from the presenter, Mr. Mthintso, when he
says... Mama. John, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Can you hear what...
Yes.
Okay, fine, Mama, go on. Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, I would like to know the clarity from Mr. Mtintso on page 3. It's written here millions, but when he's giving us the presentation, he's mentioning billions.
Yes.
So what is it? Is it billions or millions? That's my first clarity. My second clarity is about the, what is it, vacancy. That is a vacancy. It's 366 instead of 376, so 10 vacancies, yeah, 10 vacancies. When are they intending to fill up those vacancies, and what is the problem, in fact, in filling them up? My other question is on page 15 about the high-level service value chain, when he says that partnership with local government. My concern, or if maybe you can clarify the strategy, better strategy, which is going to be implemented, because previous interaction with them, we were told that it's difficult to work with the local government because they, one of the reasons, lack capacity, they don't understand, the process is too long to arrive where they want to arrive, maybe to build the schools or infrastructure. What mechanism are they going to use now? Also, about the risk analysis, are they intending to table to, when they are saying that we must assist around the legislative and policy environment, that would mean that there should be a bill. We should start, we are going to start working on a bill on that. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Madlala. Honorable Stolle.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, Chairperson, we want to congratulate the agents for the job well done. But mine is just you. First one is on this document. On page 13, the apologies of Dr. Tom and this is, are they still with you because it doesn't sound well. And the other one, Chair, is that under Auditor General on page 73, where they talk about the extended time management. Chair, I don't know what I want to find out from them is that what measurement do they have to because if you can check it on the accounting authority did not take effective and appropriate steps to prevent fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. What measurement do they take there? And the other one, Chair, is the term leadership. That did not have sufficient monitoring control to ensure adherence to all applicable laws and in the regulation. And for that one, we want to find out what is the status now. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Stenis.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking at last year's report as well, and the Auditor General highlighted his concerns there about lack of evidence on the reporting on targets. And I see it's flagged again in this year's report as an issue. And what steps is the department taking to ensure that that particular aspect of the AG's concern is addressed?
Thank you. Honorable Gayla. That's why I want all of you to concentrate. You can win. Honorable Gayla.
Now, I want to echo the same words as my colleagues. It's a job well done, CEO. And, you must not think we're fighting with you when we at these county levels. We work as a team from different parties, not fighting with you. All we simply want is to just remind you this is a job that has to be done. And it's well done. Just a few things on this presentation. I think there's an error. The presentation is to the committee, not the minister, in future. not just a committee presentation. We know the authorities on this, but it belongs to the committee. Then, I just gave your input on this one. You've done very well. You speak to communities down there, we involve the communities, everybody's there with you. But I'm worried about your future involvement in math schools. It seems it's been taken away from you. And it's had backlash from the construction industry as well as for many people. And we've just been talking to CITP here. And we commented IDT. And we also said that because of IDT, some of the contractors have been moved to higher grades. And we requested them to work with you. One needs your comment because we see now all of a sudden there's DBSA involving math schools. What is your comment on that? And what are you doing to retain what you see, what you should be doing and doing very well? So there's a major concern. I have a major concern about it, and I know the stakeholders have a major concern. And it also seems like those schools are being batched to target certain groups which will not create any jobs in any way. But you also need to be proactive on this one. One feels that you need to be proactive on this one. It's just really, it's unfair and it's not right, and going to destroy the emerging contractors, there will be less jobs created and so and so. I just need your comment on that one, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gayla. Honorable members, are you covered? CEO, it's just out of interest when Mr. Mkinso, did I pronounce it? Mkinso. When you indicated to us on the 14th of June that you would like to be a major public entity, and we indicated to you to say you must go back and that there are four steps for you to follow for you to be a major public entity, and that after following the four steps that were recommended to you, you'll come back to us to inform us to say how far are you, and I'll be interested to know how far are you with the process of being a major public entity, whether the department, the minister has approved that or what's happening. Can we just get a briefing on that one? Yes, you.
Thank you, honorable members. We appreciate that at least we have attempted to respond to some of the directives and guidance that you have given us. It was really an attempt, and we had to give it to the younger people to think out of the box to comply with the requirements of the committee. And I appreciate that it seems like we have met those expectations. But also, honorable members, to say that for us, it is this guidance that we require, because we clearly understand the different roles of the legislative process, which is Parliament and us as implementers. And unless we are guided, we will not be able to achieve the objectives that we have been set up for. My colleagues will assist me in responding, but I just want to take some of the issues that have been raised, particularly in page 73, the two issues on the accounting authority. Yes, honorable members, the issues there that were raised mainly referred to the absenteeism of some of the board members, which the chairperson has adequately addressed, and were advised by the AG in terms of how to address that, and we have been able to implement that. So that has been taken care of, honorable members. On the leadership, the IDT did not have sufficient monitoring controls to ensure adherence to all applicable laws and regulations. Yes, honorable members, this was an error. I must say that it was an error on my side. We had a regional general manager whom we had charged for misconduct of non-performance. In the process of investigating that, we stumbled on irregular expenditures or claims of 8,000 rand. When I got that report, honorable members, I thought 8,000 rand was not a big amount for me to report to the accounting authority and to the executive authority. Moreover, we recovered that money from the leaf that this particular staff member had. The Auditor General's finding was that that 8,000, no matter how minimal it is, I should have reported it to the board and to the executive authority. So that was an error on my side in judgment in terms of the amount of money. So that is what is referred in this particular instance, honorable member. The other issues in terms of the alternative method of construction, Mr. Wakaba will report to that, but I think I must just indicate that the biggest challenge with the alternative method is that because it is fast, it takes a very short time. And when you calculate, because there is a formula of calculating what becomes a job opportunity, it reduces that. So it doesn't mean that there is less people. In some instances, there's actually more people. But because of the short time, when you calculate the job opportunities, it shrinks that. I think one of the things that we have put forward is that really to meet the job creation, which is a concern that we also have, we need to balance up when do we use the construction methods and when do we use the normal methods of construction, particularly given the fact that we think we have done a lot in building the construction industry, particularly from a black point of view, and therefore we can't indirectly as well be killing the same industry that we have grown. So we are quite conscious about that, but we are completing the report, which is a CSIR, is going through the schools that we've been piloting to give us a scientific report, which we'll present to MINMEC, and maybe I can suggest that we can also bring the report to the committee, so the committee can also help us in terms of how do we move forward with this particular program. But we are aware of those issues. Again, Mr. Wakaba might talk in detail in terms of the other contributing factors in the employment reduction figures. For instance, when we do big projects like the High Courts, you find that the number of labor, the number of people on the ground are less because you need much more skilled people in those programs. That has also had an effect on that. But from a program point of view, my colleagues will talk to that. You have also mentioned, honorable members, the youth participation and the women participation compared to the expenditure. The explanation there is that you can have a lot of women participating, but on very small projects. So when you quantify the expenditure of the money that is allocated, it's lower than the number that has participated. For instance, if you look at the rehabilitation of buildings for disability access, it's small projects of 200,000, of 300,000. So you can have a lot of women, but the quantum of the amounts is very little, equally with the youth. That is the tendency that we find. Because when you, as you go up in the CIDP, you find that there is less of those people at that level. So it's more of a capacity building process. What we did as IDT is to incubate the SAWIC, South African Women in Construction, which institutionally we've been able to give them an office to grow that particular organization so that the capacity of the women that are participating in some of these programs at least can be secured. But as honorable members would understand that it's still a bit of a long way for us to get them at the right level where they can be able to handle bigger projects than the one that we are currently allocating. Mr. Mtinso will clarify page 3, millions and billions. The staff vacancy of 10%, honorable members. I must say that for us, each time there is a vacancy, we relook into the structure. Because as we're going through rationalization, we also have a cost-saving strategy. The cost-saving strategy is to try and assist us to even reduce our overhead costs further. So we don't immediately fill up. We really look into the post. Do we need this particular post? Or we need a different type of a post? So for us, with the 10%, it's almost like part of our repositioning of the organization than a vacancy that would want to hurry to appoint. But I do accept the concern of members that this is the year of job creation, and therefore even 10% might be a lot in terms of a vacancy rate. Let me come to the question that the chairperson has raised in terms of the major public entity, the four steps that have been recommended. Honourable members, we've actually practically completed the process, as you are aware, that the process of becoming a major or a public entity has got different stages. We've now handed over the business case to the minister, and the minister has approved the business case, but as you are aware, there's still some consultations. There's the joint evaluation task team that the minister must convene. There is treasury that he must consult with. There's DPSA that he must consult with. I think there is also this committee. Honorable Chairperson, you'd recall that I hope we're not overtaken by time, but you had indicated that we could sit in a workshop where we could actually go through that, so that by the time the minister brings it to the portfolio committee, you have been able to unpack and really understood exactly what is in there. And we're still awaiting for that opportunity, which we'd really appreciate, because as you have said, we really require your guidance as well in terms of how to move further. The four steps that you had articulated for us, we've tried to go through that, each of them, and we've put together the business case. We do have copies of the business case, and we think now that we've presented it to the minister, we can be able to distribute it to the committee even before the workshop, but we'll be guided by the committee. The honourable members have spoken about a very sensitive issue, the issue of mud schools. I'm saying it's sensitive because before DBSA was allocated the funding, they came to negotiate with us, but their models of operation, we were really not in agreement with them. They implement through 10 key. I don't know if honorable members, where you find that you can take 20 schools and give it to one big company, a Murray and Roberts, to implement. Now, through our experiences that we have had, for us, we will not achieve the targets that we are presenting to you. Because from a development point of view, that is how you will measure us in terms of those empowerment elements. And I think because we did not meet each other with that, we felt that we would be compromising our mandate as an organization. So we did not enter into an agreement with DBSA. We are aware we have received a number of concerns, particularly from the Eastern Cape, from the small contractors who feel excluded from the process. Unfortunately, there is very little that we can do because that process is somehow out of our control. The implementing agent at the moment is DPSA. But we will definitely, wherever we interact with them, we will raise this concern, honourable members, but we cannot guarantee that we will be able to resolve that. Honourable member, my sincere apologies. We assumed maybe the minister will be here, so we included that, and we sincerely apologize for that process. The last year's report on the performance information, honourable members would recall that actually on performance information last year, we got a disclaimer. We had put a lot of effort because that was the first time that the Auditor General was auditing performance information. I think this year I was talking to the AG and they're saying so far there isn't any other organisation that has got the results that we have from a performance audit point of view. And I'm very pleased with that. Although we are from that state, but there has been major improvements in terms of our performance information. And we are continuing to improve on that. We're not just relaxing now that we're at this stage. So we can assure you that we will be continuing to improve on that. The risk analysis issues, honorable members, you are correct. Part of the request for a workshop would be, again, to guide us. We have indicated in the recommendations to the minister, one, that we need a registration, that we will be starting on a legislative framework with the leader of government. So, and we hope that the department has registered that. Even just to check, that would also assist us whether really there is a process that has come to you in that respect. But that's part of the leadership and guidance that we will be requesting from the committee in as far as the future of the organization, both from a policy point of view and the legislative framework. My colleague has indicated that from a PFMA point of view and treasury point of view, government is no more keen to work with trusts, which means the trust status of the organization will have to be dissolved, and we will have to get a legislation and act that puts the department, the organization, in good standing. The page 15, the high level service chain. What is the improved strategy for local government? Maybe I can request my colleagues to help me, who are directly on the ground with that. I've tried to respond to all, but I have not. I'm sure you can help me with it.
So thank you. The two questions, Chair, I would want to take or respond to. One, my CEO has touched on it, relates to the performance information management. Chair, this notion of the audit of performance information along with financial information has taken off greatly, and has been indeed a big issue. Just to make an example of some of the things that we've tripped into, which will become wiser as we move forward. If you have a target of employing or engaging people living with disabilities to participate in your programs, the kind of evidence that you would have to produce, which is acceptable to the Auditor General, is impossible to provide. You actually need from each person's doctor a certificate confirming the disability of the individual, which you know, if you consider the value chain of doing development, sometimes often becomes a very difficult thing to secure. Often when we set these targets, we would base it on logic that if you've got people participating, you can always visually observe you know, if there are any disabled people in the project. Some of the things we tripped on, for example, is the labor spend in programs, which records reside or in custody of the third party service providers that we would work with. Now, whilst the service providers would give us reports in terms of the labor spend, but some of that would not be acceptable to the Auditor General as evidence that they can rely upon to support your reported figure. So the insight we have moving forward in tightening our management of this area includes reviewing our own performance indicators into those things which we have a direct control, which we are in a position to actually produce the evidence. One of the, you know, insights we have is that sometimes you have what we may call it transformation targets, things that you may not necessarily have the system to measure, but because you want to get the environment to move towards that direction, you begin to put them up into your performance scorecard, so that as your people do what they do, they think about these things. One of them, for example, would be women participation. Women participation, we would report on it based on a number of indicators. One would be observed participation of women in community engagements, which could be supported through attendance register. But one would be the number of women participating in the development initiatives. In other words, the value of programs that goes to women. So if you combine all of those indicators, you may have three or four, you may then have a considered a figure of 58% participation. Now, from an Auditor General point of view, that is not enough, because they need a scientific reconciled evidence that shows that this is how you got to the actual participation. But if I move, Chair,
and talk briefly about our engagement of local government. Our engagement of local government largely is in the area of institutional support. The idea is how we support them in improving their capacity to deliver on their mandate. And therefore, generally speaking, as a sector which acknowledges its challenges, we often find them receptive. Of course, the issue of the ethic remains a challenge. The issue of governance within the environment remains a challenge. As you would know, whoever you work with, the more in order that house is, the better are the chances of success. So these are some of the general challenges that we generally come across. But from an attitude point of view of engaging, the attitude is positive. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, our members.
There were a few questions which my colleague may respond to relating to finance.
Okay, my colleague.
Chair, thank you. I think there's one that does require response, and that is the question of the employment decrease from 413 to 366. On page 72 of the annual report, Chair, there is a listing of the reasons for termination of services. By far the biggest two reasons was resignation, 49, and end of contract, 27. Now, the end of contract speaks for itself, and I think that's a question of these role in accordance with the contracts that are being entered into. The concern, and it's been touched on by my colleague, as far as the resignations is concerned, relates to some degree of uncertainty as to the future of IDT. And it's an issue that we built into the risks. People get concerned when they don't see stability, and one of the things that they do is they start looking for other employment. And it's a very big challenge and a major problem when good skills are lost. Thank you.
Thank you. CFO, I'm worried about the legal cases. Though I know that they are not of your own making, it's because you're not paid on time. Isn't there a way where you can make sure that you make reservations maybe for the payments of those that have rendered services so that they should not be I'm just throwing it to you so that next time there should not be legal cases against you.
Thank you, Chair. If I can respond very briefly, because your comment is very appropriate. There are, on page 92 of the document, a number of cases that have come forward from the previous year. Some of these instances relate to work where the service provider did not in fact provide the service adequately. There is a legal challenge from the IDT against such service providers, and I think those differ from the listing on the following page, on page 93, where there are approximately 8 or 10 service providers who've raised a legal challenge because of non-payment. Chair, your comment is appropriate with regard to concerns where small service providers are being disadvantaged. There are, within that group, one or two large organizations. Our challenge has been in the delay of funds coming through to us, and I think it's fair to say that we have, on occasions where there has been seen a very urgent need to ensure that the smaller emerging service providers are in fact protected, funds have been made available by the IDT for that. But these are being monitored very carefully, and the departments, where appropriate, are being chased as far as we can. Thank you, Chair.
Thank
maybe,
you.
Maybe just look at Chair to say we've also started interacting directly with Treasury to see how they can assist us. And whilst we're still working on the processes, but it seems positive that where we have tried all means and there's no payment, we can appeal to the Accountant General, who can then instruct that Treasury pays us directly. We're still working on that process, Chair, but we will keep the committee informed.
Thank you. Honorable Gila?
Yes, no, it's just a small one, Chairperson. About the DBAC and the 10 points. One feels, Chairperson, that assuming that DBAC invited you, that you should give us a report about that. Because I'm worried that you've created these contractors and they are in good grades. So all of a sudden, that is going to be destroyed. And we are the committee that oversees the construction. I don't know how we have to handle it, Chairperson, because it's DBSA, they don't report to us, but this is a big problem. And when it explodes, it's going to affect us as well. Mm-hmm. There are memos to the President regarding this year, and it's a major problem. If you go to Eastern Cape, it's a major problem. And we feel you should defend your space. You created contractors. All of a sudden, they're going to be destroyed. Where will they be able to tender for 80 million batch schools? They will never be able to do that. So we feel that, please give us a report why you were invited, why didn't you, you know, so that at least we have something from your side as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gayla. Any action? None. Honorable members? Yes, Mama. Okay.
Oh, no, I think there were two, actually. I'm sorry for the confusion, honorable members, but it's actually, if you read it, it's million. But it become, if it's 5,000, then it's 5 billion. It's 5,000 million. So it becomes 5 billion.
Mm.
Yes. It's, if you look at that figure, I think it's 5,220. Million. Yeah, 5,520,000 million, if I put that way, which is 5 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we've come to the end of our meeting. It has been a long day. I can see that some of you are tired. And to IDT, thank you very much for the presentation and for coming at a very short notice. And I would like to say we are expecting to meet you again, all the entities and the Department of Public Works, on the 8th of November, where Public Works will brief us on the performance of all the entities. So just go back, prepare, and everything of the best, and drive safely, especially those that are young from here. And my Mama Dlala, I'm so happy that I didn't know that Usi's change. It's got a big boy of his age. Thank you very much, and nice knowing you. Bye. CEO will expect the report, and the secretary will look into the issue of the workshop. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
No, you know what I mean?